protected. I'm not going to let you drive an automobile until you're 25 years of age. You and I could attempt to do that with our child. You know darn well, if you understand human nature, that there's a 50-50 chance that child will rebel in various ways. That child will be driving, you just won't know about it. They'll be driving somebody else's automobile. Or they'll move out of the house and do whatever. There's a 50-50 chance that child will rebel. You don't have that control of a quasi-adult. But they do feel that they are controlling the health and welfare of their innocent young children. That's what the people in Babel feel they're doing. Their motivation is a good one. We have to make sure we do not belittle them. We do not make fun of them. Their effort is sincere, obvious by what they're willing to do and what they're willing to give up with their sincerity. And they really feel that their lawsuit is something worth pursuing. Unfortunately, the whole situation is going to become expensive. It's going to become an anguish-causing situation. And the chances of success are very, very slim. Almost impossible, as I see it. So we're going to have to slowly educate our friends and neighbors in the town of Babel that radio is their friend. It's not their enemy. That's the way I see it. Somebody else wanted to make a further comment on this. This is a tough situation. It's not going to go away. We are the radio savvy people. You and I, the people within the sound of my voice, use radio on a daily basis. We love it. We just can't get enough of it. There's 26 different kinds of ham radio. We're exposed to it all the time. We have reason to believe that the risk it might create is extremely small compared to the benefit, and we're willing to continue doing it. We have the knowledge, we have the direct hands-on exposure and experience of using it. Therefore, we have the ability to slowly educate our friends in Babel. That's what's going to have to take place. It's not going to take place overnight. It's almost as bad as the situation that comes with reference to various kinds of prejudice. And this is a kind of prejudice. It's a prejudice against the technology of wireless equipment. And you know that the other kinds of prejudice the United States has gone through, and we're not truly through them yet, takes multiple generations for the problem to go away, for the problem to be improved. We're into a situation like that. I'm afraid it's going to take more than a generation to solve the problem of Babel. I hope I'm wrong, but that's what I think. Anyone who has an opinion on this one and how to solve it, give me a call. Let us right now. K2RIW on the TechNet. Go right ahead, Wesley.
Not quite as solving the problem, but I wanted to continue on my idea, so if you can give me a minute, I think I might want to put it back what it was just said.
Okay. Let me go over to Wesley first, who wants to make a comment, and then briefly I'm going to go over to Alex, and then we've got to pick up Paul, who is one of the original questioners. We shouldn't keep him waiting too long. After we've gone through all the questions, we can go back to this particular situation. Wesley, go ahead.
Okay, just the simple question for you, based on your experience. The cost of putting up the tower, we understand that this particular city, you don't have to have, you cannot have many towers, you can have one tower, a huge one which covers the large area, and the antennas, and of course, the cost of that tower with everything together, and the cost of using coaxial cable. How many miles coaxial cable could be run for that money? Back to you, Andy.
Okay, so I think what you're advocating is that rather than put up a central point of transmission for the radio signals required for cell phones, fire, police, and emergency vehicles, rather than put up a central point of transmission with the, let me pick a number, 30-watt transmitters and the antennas that they have right now, I think what you're advocating is they run a whole bunch of radiac cable around the town, where now only milliwatts of power are required to go into the cable, as opposed to the tens of watts of power that goes into the antennas. You're advocating that as a alternate solution. Interesting sounding alternate solution. But I see two problems, Alex. Based on what I know about the Radiax cable that's installed in subway tunnels and other kinds of above ground tunnels where cars drive, in the Radiax cable that's installed, you can send a roughly 200 or 300 milliwatt signal down the cable, and the signal radiated by the cable has enough range and enough signal strength to go approximately 2 miles. After that, another amplifier is required. So the situation is not too different from setting up a cable television system. Cable television systems, you have to have a significant number of amplifiers for that signal going down those cables. To cover all of the square miles of a town with all of the Radiax cable and all of those amplifiers is an extremely expensive endeavor. It's almost as expensive and maybe even more expensive than setting up a cellular, than setting up a cable television system. That's a big investment in money. On top of that, the residents who are already afraid of signals radiated into the air from the antennas on the water tower will probably have an equal fear of the slightly weaker signal at a closer distance of all those cables going up and down all the streets. I'm a little bit afraid the residents will be against that one also for the reason of thinking it creates radio frequency biohazard. So I see an economic problem and I see a psychological problem that may not be a solution. Do you see what I'm worried about here, Wesley? N2XJN, K2RIW.
K2JN. Agree with you. You're absolutely right. The only thing is that the comparison between the wire that is run by the telephone company, and it's everywhere, and is a bunch of money. When you use the same poles, and you just run the coaxial cable, leaking coaxial cable, is that going to use existing infrastructure? So it's not going to be very expensive, but yes, you're right, psychological factor is not to disregard, because they're going to be opposed. Alex wanted to say some, if you let me, I give the microphone to Alex and to Jeff.
Eric is the man who runs the machine, and he had a comment, so we better give it to Eric first. Go ahead, Eric, KE2EJ, K2RIW in the tech net.
Yeah, I think I just wanted to throw a couple things in there about Radiax, is that because you need amplifiers every so many feet, actually, that's not only going to add to the cost, but then you have other problems, is that the cascade noise of the amplifiers themselves, and the other thing is the efficiency of the aperture in the Radiax itself, that really gives you a tremendous amount of distance range. So there's losses involved there that most people don't think about. I have a lot of experience using it for RF microphones and stuff like that, plus the fact that it's also an antenna and whatever else is in the air, then becomes part of the equation. So Radiax sometimes is not the best solution unless you're in a controlled environment. K2RWK2GI.
In the case of a subway tunnel, which only has a diameter of, let me pick a number, 100 feet or so, 150 feet, you're not likely to be more than 75 feet or so away from the Radiax cable, so that your cross-track distance between your handy-talkie and the Radiax cable is a short distance, and by inverse square law, that works out reasonably well. To get that same kind of benefit by putting Radiax around a town, similar to a cable television system, you'd almost have to put a Radiax cable up and down every single street, every single block. That's a lot of cable. It's like another cable television system. It's going to be lots of millions of dollars to do that, to install all that cable, to get all that permission from all of those telephone pole owners, to install all those amplifiers, all those power supplies. And even then, although you've now got a more distributed system, you've got a lot of hardware installation. You've got to worry about extraneous signal pickup. As Eric was telling you, you have to be concerned about the signal-to-noise ratio at each individual amplifier. So in other words, you can't space the amplifiers too far. Otherwise, the signal gets so weak that the next stage of amplification is amplifying noise as well as signal. So it's got to be a carefully designed system. It's got to be a bi-directional system. Many cable TV systems are unidirectional. You have a master antenna picking up the signal from, let's say, New York City, amplifying it, sending it down the cable in one direction. But in this radiac system that we're now describing for the town, it would have to be bi-directional. The policeman or the fireman that's at the tail end of the cable at the far end of the town has to receive the signal from the center of town, and he's got to be able to send a signal back. So you got to have amplifiers in different frequencies and duplexing filters and whatever to make a bi-directional amplifying system, and it's that makes it probably almost twice as expensive as not more than a normal cable TV system. So it's a very tough way to go, as you can see, Wesley. Alex, you wanted to make a brief comment on my previous subject? Go right ahead. KQLIW in the TechNet. Hey. Alex, let me interrupt you. Alex, there's something not quite right with your radio system tonight. You're on the right frequency. You've got the right amount of modulation, but the carrier coming through to the system is much weaker than normal. Your voice is only there 30% of the time. The rest of the time, it's dropout. And in between all those dropouts, and I'm listening on the input, I'm not hearing your signal on either or one of the input frequencies. So your power out of your transmitter tonight is weaker than normal, or there is some other source of an interference being picked up by the repeater tonight. So I'm only getting very little pieces of what you're saying, but I do get the point. And one of the points you're making, let me drop.
Is that better now?
It's somewhat better now. One of the points you're making is that if we ask all of our ham radio operators how many of them have a heart condition, you will get a significant answer. Coronary artery disease is the number one disease in the United States among both ham radio operators and non-ham radio operators. And you have the opinion, and you might be right, I'm not sure, that ham radio operators are getting a higher percentage of cardiovascular problems. You might be right, or that might be anecdotal. Until a more thorough investigation is done, we can't be sure. But even if we find out that ham radio operators have a higher percentage of cardiovascular health problems compared to the normal population, that is not yet strong evidence that the radio signal is the cause. Ham radio operators live a particular lifestyle where they're more sedentary. They sit in front of rigs instead of sitting in front of a television set. They're the own version of couch potatoes. They expose themselves to certain kinds of chemistry where they clean printed circuit boards. They expose themselves to the lead fumes from doing soldering. They do a whole lot of other things besides exposing themselves to a radio signal. So to say that the radio signal is the cause is not yet proof. It's just a piece of evidence, if you know what I mean. The research that you're about to do and the evidence and the equipment that you're about to gather sounds to me like a worthy project. And I hope it goes well. I know that you would like to trace certain biological ions as they move through a cardiovascular system, and you'd like to measure whether or not they get changed in any way when exposed to a radio signal. Beautiful technique. I hope you get a chance to do that. Over to you, Alex, N2NNU, K2LIW in the TechNet.
How am I now with the repeater, static?
Very much improved. What did you do? Go ahead.
Not much. Don't worry about it. Listen, I really hate when you do that. You interrupted me, and I don't really appreciate that. Anyhow, that's okay. You say that you are for 40 or 50 years or 60 years, whatever, in the radio, and you know radio. Okay. please tell me what a radio wave is? If you can tell me that, then we don't need CERN, we don't need Fermi, we don't need anybody. You will be the god of gods, because you know what radio wave is. All right, that's first question. Second of all, let me tell you something that I worked out last week. Have you ever read about osmosis? Osmosis is a mechanical transport medium, transport way of ions between two different liquids through a separating membrane. So osmosis is practically some sort of mechanical movement. You move from here to there a little particle. To our surprise, to my surprise, this movement does not require energy, Dick. There is first time when I see that some particle is moving and it doesn't need energy. Guess why? Because the ion is gliding along the electrical field set up for it by the nerve itself. You understand what I'm saying? The ion is gliding through the membrane between the two solutions by electrical field set up for it by the surrounding environment. Now, if you tinker with it, what do you think is happening? Back to you.
Okay, Alex, I'm going to answer your two questions. Of the original people who signed in, Paul, WS2N is one of those. I'm going to go over to Paul, answer his question, and then come back to yours. But briefly now, your first question is, can I, after my 40 years of experience with high-power radio, describe what a radio wave is? And I'm very humbly admitting I do not know. I wish I did. I've made lots of measurements. I've got lots of empirical evidence. I can calculate to the nearest tenth of a dB how strong that signal is going to be when it comes from your backyard to my backyard, when it comes from the moon to the Earth, when it comes from the Voyager spacecraft back to the Earth after billions of miles. I can calculate the signal strength, the antenna pattern, the frequency, the polarization. I know lots of information about that radio signal. Quantitative measurements, but qualitatively, what is the radio wave itself? I don't know. I got some strong suspicions, but I don't know. Because I don't know, you have a strong feeling that it has other effects on ions that we don't know about, and you might be right. And yes, when it comes to osmosis, the ion transport you get across the membrane with osmosis is a bit difficult to understand, and I'm not enough of a chemist to understand it. However, as an energy source, you can't get perpetual motion out of that. Mother Nature wants to balance the fact that there's a higher concentration of ions on one side of the membrane and a lower concentration on the other, and Mother Nature moves fluids and ions in such a way to balance that condition, and you can't get energy out of that for a permanent period of time. Eventually it comes to a balance and stops unless you keep putting more reactants into the two different solutions that are on both sides of that membrane. So temporarily you can get some nice energy out of an osmosis system, but you can't get permanent energy out of it. So and when that ion transport takes place, would that ion transport be interfered with by a local radio wave? And I think that's the experiment, that's one of the experiments which I believe you're about to start conducting. And I'm looking forward to hearing what your results are going to be. Is that ion transport by the process of osmosis modified in any way by the presence of a local radio signal, a wireless signal? My gut feel is the answer is no, but you're about to find out. Let's go over to Paul, who said he's got a technical question for us tonight. Paul, normally, and after you tell us the technical question, also tell us what's going on in space. I wonder if you were able to confirm the five new planets of the There were 300 planets previously known, and 5 more were recently discovered by the Kepler telescope that recently was put in operation to look for Earth-sized planets around suns that are in the Cygnus galaxy. Over to you, Paul, WS2N, K2RIW in the TechNet.
Okay, Dick, this is WS2N. Yeah, they said when that thing's up and running on a long-term basis, there's going to be 50 planets, Earth-sized planets, per month. That was one of the estimates staring at one portion of the sky, Dick. So I got to keep up with all the names, and well, they won't have names, they'll have designations of them. The star systems that they're in. So it's gonna be fun. It'll probably take them 20 years to, after the mission is complete, after a year and a half to evaluate all that information, all that data. Technical question, Dick. Okay. The final question. I'll start with the actual question itself, and then I'll let you know how I got there. When you have a three-pronged plug plugged into voltage protection systems, you know, you buy these things from Home Depot, you plug all your equipment into it, and most of the ham equipment, you know, I have two prongs, some things have three prongs. Suppose you had a piece of equipment, in this case, it's a television set, and you take one of these adapters, these little gray adapters that you would normally want to, let's say you had a two-prong plug and you wanted to plug a three-prong apparatus into it, you would plug this adapter in, and then you would plug your three-prong plug into that and ground it either with a wire that's hanging off of it or the one that has a screw in you. Might screw it to the plate to ground that piece of equipment. Suppose you took that same adapter, plugged it into the television set, did not hook up the ground, eliminated the ground. It's a three-prong plug coming out of the TV. And now you're eliminating the ground and plugging it into this protector, the overload protector device. Would that work? And then I'll let you know why I'm in this situation. Back to you, Dick. WS.
Okay, now when it comes to a ground fault interrupter, that's what you call it, a GFI. In theory, all of the major sockets in our bathroom and kitchen and outside sockets around the house should definitely have GFI protected devices installed. And if you're a conservative person, every single socket in the house should have a GFI socket. But certainly the ones in the bathroom, kitchen, and outdoor sockets should definitely have them. The reason they should be there is to protect you from electrical shock. It is not an overload protector per se, although some of them may also have that function. The main reason it's there is to protect human life. Let me explain how that could happen.
That's not the case. Not the GFI thing.
Okay. If the thing that's protecting your socket is not a GFI, and it's an overload protector, does that mean it's a circuit breaker? Over to you, Paul.
No, you know, you buy these six-prong plugs, plug it into the wall, and it's just if you wind up with a surge protector, or if you suddenly get 200 volts, it's going to protect your equipment, that type of device.
Okay, that's an overvoltage protector. That's a spike protector. And many of them contain an MOV, metal oxide varistor. And if, for instance, you're using an MOV that's rated for, I'll pick a number, 250 volts maximum, any spike above 250 volts, the MOV goes into the conduction mode, won't allow the spike to, if it's an inductive kickback spike, it really wants to go to thousands of volts, and anything above 250, in my example, the MOV becomes conductive, and that shorts that high voltage spike to ground during that period of time. That's the good news. But MOVs have a finite life. There's a finite number of times they can give you that protection before the internal mechanism starts wearing out, so to speak. So when you're using one of those gray devices, which if, for instance, your particular plug in the wall only has two prongs because it's an old-fashioned wired house and it doesn't have the three prongs, the extra center round neutral prong or grounding prong, if it doesn't have that and you've got a three-wire plug coming out of your television set or you've got a three-wire plug coming out of your spider device, your multi-connector thing, and you want to connect it to that wall, you have to use this gray isolating device, mechanical isolator. Let me drop. And because most of the older houses that have only two prong plugs, Franklin is one of them, is a wide blade and a narrow blade there. Most of them, if it's properly wired, you know which one is hot and which one is ground. The narrow blade is the hot one, and the wide blade, I think, is the grounded one, that it's wired correctly. I hope I don't have that backwards. And because most of those older houses were wired with BX cable, and BX cable has a natural steel shield that got screwed down to the outlet box, therefore the metal box is grounded, and when you ground that screw on the center of your gray mechanical isolating device, you're reestablishing ground, and all should be well. The MOVs, to my knowledge, are simply going between the two blades and not necessarily involving the neutral wire, the grounding wire. I think that's the question you're asking, Paul. Are you still getting protection from your overvoltage spike eliminator when you're using one of those gray insulating things? I believe the answer is yes. But drag your feet before picking it up, because frequently we have people with a lot more electrical knowledge than Mel and I do, who will chime in and tell us whether or not you are still getting protection. WS2N with some delay. K2LIW in the tech man.
Comment.
Yeah, K2KEY.
Okay, I heard Wesley and Mel in that order. Wesley, go ahead.
Well, basically the two wire plug has the ground in it. The thing is that number of connections till it goes to the circuit breaker and till it goes to the front. And the reason why the city of Peru decided to use crackshock, not crackshock, cables, and add additional wire. But for that, when these rules does not obligate people to put in regular wire. It's also the third wire, thin wire, that is serving as a ground. Yes, you can use two wire connector, and you will still have a ground, and most likely you will have unless you're out or your plug or put in is damaged, and it will allow you to put the reverse way. There were all type of connectors that you had, they, 10 years ago, 4 years ago, they did not have both plates, both contacts, to be different ones. They were alike, the same one.
And way back in even the earlier days, New York City had DC power, 120 volts, 110 volts DC. And if you plugged the radio in with the wrong polarity on that plug, the radio wouldn't run, and you had to reverse the polarity. The two prongs were identical in size in the old days. So modern-day television sets don't have a power transformer anymore. In the old days, they used to have a power transformer, and the primary winding versus the secondary winding gave you a lot of isolation and gave you a lot of protection. Now most television sets directly rectify the 110 volts, and if the plug was plugged in the wall the wrong way, the whole printed circuit board ground could become hot, and any contact with that to a human being could be dangerous. Well, modern day television sets have multiple insulation to them. All the knobs are plastic, the case is plastic, the whole printed circuit board floats with reference to the outer cabinet, which is non-conducting. So there's multiple kinds of protection built into a modern day set. But still, any use of that gray mechanical isolating device, know ahead of time it's dangerous. That if you're not careful, you could get yourself in trouble. But I think Paul's main question is his spike arresting circuit still giving him protection? I think the answer is yes. Let's see what Mel's going to say on this one. K2KEY, K2RIW.
Well, first of all, we also thought of seeing the end of, television. That's when it's still, to remember, I had a lot of television coming through the series too. There's not no power train components in them. And that's, in other words, the chassis was basically a lie. Some of them were in metal cabinets. It's not the best thing in the world, but some of them, you had to use an isolation transformer. All right, but besides that, they sell these, these extensions, the multi-power extensions, and they have a see them all over, any of these types of devices. I opened up a few of them, one that I cannibalized. It's little units that are on the power supply, those filter blocks and all. I noticed they all have two MOVs in there, six. But each one goes to one of the pins, and then to the ground pin. They don't depend on one MOV. They have two in the type of devices that go on.
Okay, they got two MOVs, and both MOVs go from a main blade over to the neutral pin, the grounding pin. I see a bit of a problem with that one, Mel. That when the grounding pin is truly grounded, the MOV, let's assume the MOV is rated for 250 volts max. And a 250 volt spike occurs on either one of the main blades, then the MOV will go into its conduction and give you protection. If I'm now using one of those gray isolating devices that Paul is describing to me, mechanical isolators, because I've only got two prongs in my particular old-fashioned wired house, and I've got a three-prong plug in my hand, and I want to be able to mate the two. And so I use that mechanical isolating device, and if I don't properly ground its little tab coming out that you're supposed to screw down, now each one of those MOVs going over to that grounding pin, and that grounding pin is floating in the air because of the way Paul has wired it, I now have my two MOVs in series. If each MOV in my example is rated for 250 volts, I'm now not going to be protected unless a 500-volt spike comes along, because the two MOVs are now in series. So if I'm not grounding that pin, I'm getting some protection. I'm getting 500 volts of protection, but I'm not getting the normal 250 volts of protection. You see where I'm going there, Mel? K2KEY, K2RIW.
Exactly. You're 100% right. That's what they're doing now. The ones that he's talking about, those adapters with the pin pit, they stop them. Go and you'll look for them, any of them now. They don't have that kind anymore. The ones they have is like a spring type of clip coming out that you can secure to the center of the plate via the screw to lean against the screw to begin with. In other words, if the screw right at the edge of that plug. So when you put that plug in, immediately ground itself to the plate or to the center plate through. And unless you use maybe a plastic plate, it still will out of the screw head, Dick. The ones with the hanging pigtails, I think I haven't seen them anymore. I think that's why they stopped them over.
I think you're right. The one with the pendant cable, the wire, the green wire coming out with the clip on the end of it, the tab, I think they've been eliminated. They're the only ones you can buy. Have got the tab coming out right at the bottom, which is right at the screw. But unless you remove that screw before installing that mechanical isolator, you might not be getting a good ground. So, as I see it, if Mel is right, Paul, where each one of these MOVs are wired not directly across the two blades, but they're wired each to the neutral pin, and if that neutral pin is floating and not grounded, I think you're only getting half the voltage protection. In my example, if it was a 250-volt peak inverse maximum MOV, you'd be using those two in series. You'd only be good for 500-volt spikes and above, and a 500-volt, a 499-volt spike might very well do damage to your television set. So I think it's imperative for you to ground that thing and by one test or another confirm that it is well-grounded. And you can always prove that it is a good, that it is a ground, that, well, let me backtrack now. One of the things I worried about is that when I go to Home Depot, I can buy an outlet box that's made out of blue plastic, and the box itself is not grounded. I worry about these things. I'd much rather use the metal ones. The blue plastic ones, at my house was wired with, BX cable, and if I didn't do a good job of properly connecting things internally to that blue box, I could easily have an old-fashioned plate on the outside, if I'm foolish enough, that it has only two-prong plugs to it, and I might not be getting a good ground. So when in doubt, you should take your volt-ohm milliammeter or your digital voltmeter in the AC scale with the black lead touching that screw on the center holding plate, and alternately touch each one of the main blades and confirm that you can see 110 volts or 120 volts. Make sure that your screw really is grounded. If that screw is floating, then with a VOM for sure. I worry about doing this, by the way, with a digital voltmeter. The impedance on those things is so high, it may think it sees the ground when there really isn't one there. So with an old-fashioned volt-ohm milliammeter, the guys that run 20,000 ohms per volt on the DC scale, and I think most of them run something like 5,000 ohms per volt on the AC scale, using one of those, between the center screw and each one of the blades, do you still measure the 115 volts normally that you get when you go between the two blades? That's a way of confirming that your screw is really grounded. Then when you put that mechanical gray isolator in there and screw it down, then you are reasonably sure you've got a ground, and therefore you're using your MOVs properly so that you're going to get the protection you're looking for. That's the way I see it, Paul. WS2N, K2RIW, and what's new in space? Over to you, Paul.
Use a light bulb with pigtails.
Beautiful. A light bulb big. Yeah, a light bulb with pigtail is a beautiful way of confirming. Now you're really drawing current. He's got the right idea. Over to you, Paul.
KC2MDP.
MDP recognized, but Paul first. Go ahead, Paul.
Opening system coming.
Okay, I don't hear the tone. Now I hear the courtesy tone. Very good. Now, here's how I got into this situation in the first place. Yeah, first of all, my house well, has three plugs. So I plug the surge protector into the wall, and out from plugging into that surge protector, normally the normal hookup I had the TV plugged directly into it without the gray adapter, and I had the cable box plugged into the wall. What happened was, any station that you listen to has this hum. It sounds like a 60-cycle hum. I tried the oscilloscope, but I couldn't figure out how many. It was all over the place. I couldn't narrow down exactly what it was, but it sounds like the typical 60-cycle hum that you would normally hear. Very low. Not too annoying, but enough you know, to make your ears go up. So, if it's, you know, for cable vision, talking to them, the people there didn't know. They tried to change all your audio settings, do this and do that, but finally had a guy come out, and he said he heard of it before. Let's try it. He didn't have one of the adapters. I have a couple of them here. Now, he plugged it in. I said, well, he's calling it a ground loop problem. You know, that's why you're getting this problem. So he's plugging it in. I said, well, what you're doing is you're eliminating the ground altogether from the TV. He's plugging it into the TV. He goes, yeah, that's the plan, to eliminate that ground. And we'll see if it works. Well, make a long story short, we went through quite a bit of other, you know, we changed boxes, we used HDMI cables, this and that. But to make a long story short, this worked. I mean, it eliminated that hump, like you wouldn't believe. That whole quieting, you know, by just plugging my adapter into the surge protector, and I'm plugging the TV into that. There's some kind of reaction going on between their box and my TV. If you eliminate the box, just run your coax directly to the TV, no problem. Let me drop.
Comment.
WS1. If you eliminate, take the box and put it out of the circuit, get rid of the coax, go directly to the TV, no problem, no noise. Put it through their box, and it's the noise that you come up with. So their recommendation is to use this adapter. And I was just curious about whether or not I still have any kind of protection. Apparently I don't. It sounds like double the voltage for me. These things are so inexpensive. I'll do what Mel did. I'll crack it open and see what's in there. See if there's two of those MOVs in there. That's how I got into this thing. I think it's, my guess is the switching power supply. Maybe they don't have a filter or something. How it's getting to the TV is curious to me. Is their signal backing down the ground, down there? Ground connection, or you know, just and they don't know themselves. So that's the interesting part to me is how is their signal crossing over, getting into my TV via the ground, because you eliminate that ground and just plug two wires, you know, just a hot and a neutral, and no ground, no problem. Only thing I don't want to drop it is the TV's not an L case, but, you know, I mean, it's there for a reason. If a wire should get loose inside of any piece of equipment, I've had it happen at work where I had this big machine and the wire got loose inside hot wire got loose inside the machine and it wound up going to the body of the machine, and that machine was improperly grounded, you know, damn near killed somebody. So, you know, I mean, that's always a concern, too, Dick. You know, that's the basic reason for a lot of the three wires going to any kind of equipment. Back to you, Dick. WS9.
Let me take this.
Okay, we've got Steve, KC2MDP, and also Wesley, who both want to make comments. By the way, for the people who are listening tonight, you'll notice that when Wesley talks, there's a lot of noise in the background on his signal. When Alex talks, a lot of noise in the background. Same thing with Mel, and same thing right now with Paul. There's some kind of a weather condition going on at the repeater tonight where signals that are not super strong into the repeater, you'll hear an awful lot of noise in the background. It's an unusual condition, so that if people are putting in a super strong signal tonight, you're hearing a lot of noise in the background. It's not your radio. It's coming through the machine, through the input. Now, Paul, I think there's a 50-50 chance you've got a very dangerous condition in your home that you want to know about. Let me drop and tell you about it. Okay, that third prong, when it's properly wired in your house, goes back to the main ground of your house, which in many cases is the water pipe system, as long as you don't have PVC pipes, or it is the ground rod if you've got one, but if that ground in your house, the water pipes, were not exactly at 0 volts with reference to earth, if they were, let me pick a number, 5 volts AC-wise above earth, then you would get the condition you're describing. The reason you would get the condition, because the coaxial cable that gives you cable television is a very well-grounded system. In theory, it's grounded at each individual utility pole or every other utility pole. So that coax cable coming in with your cable TV system is providing a ground for the converter box. Your television set is using a separate ground on its third prong, which is the third prong of the wiring in your house. If the wiring in your house is not earth grounded completely, if it's a couple of volts away from ground, it's one of the mechanisms by which current is flowing through your overall audio system, and you pick up a 60 cycle hum. You're about to ask, how in the world can my water pipe system be a couple of volts above earth ground at a 60 cycle rate? And that is possibly because the butt plate that's on the bottom of the telephone pole below ground on your particular pole pig transformer is not properly grounded. Each individual pole pig transformer has either the A, B, or the C phase. It picks up at 13.2 kilovolts line to line, 7,800 volts to ground. Your main power distribution going down your block is something like 7,800 volts with reference to ground. That goes into the primary of that transformer. The other lead of the primary is supposed to pick up the butt plate. But if your telephone pole has been hit a couple of times and they didn't reinstall that grounding wire, a piece of, I think it's a 6-gauge wire that goes down the side of the utility pole, and it's inside of that half-round piece of wood. If that's not properly connected because somebody stole the copper or because the telephone pole was replaced and it wasn't properly reinstalled, in that case, the so-called third wire, you've got an A and a B phase coming off the secondary of that pole pig transformer, plus a so-called neutral wire coming into your house, which gets grounded to your fuse box, which gets grounded to your water pipe system in most cases. If that pole pig transformer is not grounded at the utility pole, if your house is supplying the ground for the primary of that transformer, and if
repeater, time out.
And if anything goes wrong with the grounding of your particular, with the wiring on ground on your house, like if somebody decides to replace the main input valve on your house, the water input valve, the main valve, and they disconnect those two pieces of pipe to replace that valve, and all of a sudden 7,800 volts appears across that pipe, you can see the danger that that can create. In other words, the possibility exists that the pole pig transformer that's supporting 3 or 4 houses on your block, including your house, that the current flowing through the primary at 7,800 volts is picking up ground from your house, and therefore your ground with all of that current flowing into it from the primary of that transformer, because it's not being properly grounded by the butt plate, would lift the ground of your house above ground, above earth, because if you did a careful measurement, you would find your water pipes are not 0.0 ohms to ground. There's some number of milliohms in there, and if enough current flows through it, your ground will be above ground. There'll be some number of volts with reference to earth. If you have a clamp-on ammeter, and if you find the wire that goes from your fuse box over to your water pipe system, and you put that clamp-on ammeter across that wire, and if you don't measure less than a small fraction of 1 ampere, be suspicious. If you measure multiple amperes, you know you've got that dangerous condition. So what you think is your neutral and your ground, that third prong in your house, it's beginning to sound to me like there is a potential difference between it and the cable TV cable coming in. One of the tests you could do that might confirm this is to disconnect the F connector. Let me drop. Disconnect the F connector going into your cable TV converter box with your AC voltmeter. Measure the voltage between the third prong, the neutral of your house, and the outer shield of that coax cable that goes into your converter box. That better be millivolts. It should even be below that. If you measure any substantial number of volts there, that tells you the current that is flowing between the so-called shield of the cable and the neutral of your house, and that current flowing through the system is possibly the mechanism of home pickup. Let me pass it back to you, Paul, to make sure you understand what I'm concerned about. I think there's a 50-50 chance. The hum that you're describing is giving you a strong clue of the possibility of an unsafe condition in your house. WS2N, K2RIW on the TechNet.
Okay, Dick, let me see if I have it. Okay, very good. Okay, understood. Yeah, you check the voltage. The voltage should be that down to millivolts between the shield and the ground connection in that one room. That was going to be my question. How would you test for this? Well, okay, so I was thinking about going downstairs where the ground wire connects to the water pipe. And I don't have a clamp on an ammeter, by the way. But it, you know, all I'd be able to do is throw an ammeter between the ground clamp downstairs and the copper pipe where they clamp to. By the way, we have underground service, so there's no pole where they have it grounded outside. I have no idea. You know, the whole area is underground. So, I mean, I guess LIPA could come out and dig up the ground, right, and try to find out where the ground problem is, if there is something like that. That'll be up to them. Back to you, Dick.
Comment. Whoa, wait a minute here now. Back up. Whoa. You just said some words that can kill you. You said you were thinking about putting an ohmmeter on that wire that connects to your water pipe. You cannot do that. In order to put an ohmmeter in there, you'd have to open up that wire. If the worst case condition exists that I'm worried about, where your particular distribution dropping transformer, what I call the pole pig transformer, which in your case is in the ground instead of on top of the utility pole. Doesn't matter. If it is not properly grounded with its own, the equivalent of a butt plate, and if the real grounding of the system is being picked up by your house, and you decide to disconnect that wire going to your water pipe in order to stick your ohm meter in there, at the instant you disconnect that wire, the possibility exists that 7,800 volts will appear between that wire and your water pipe. If you're supplying the ground for the primary of that distribution transformer for you and the three neighboring houses, you don't want to interrupt that wire. Put a clamp-on ammeter around it to find out if current is flowing through it. But if any amount of substantial current is flowing through that wire, and you open it up to put your ohmmeter in there, that's an extremely dangerous condition. Do you see what I'm saying, Paul? WS2N, K2RIW.
Oh, no, I realized that. I remember them, you know, at work when they would disconnect the, you would need an electrician to disconnect the ground connections when they wanted to tie at different meters and valves. You know, that's where they would clamp a whole building for this. Gigantic pipes coming through. No, I realize that now. I was just thinking of put an ohmmeter, leave it connected, and just put an ohmmeter between the copper pipes and the clamp to see if there's, you know, to see if that connection is good. You know, maybe that's a trellis or something built up on that. Maybe I'm not getting good ground. You're saying a couple of 7,000 volts coming into the house. That, but I'm thinking, suppose it's not that, you know, maybe it's just a bad ground, you know, going to the outside world. That's what you think.
If what you say is true, and the measurement you want to make cannot be done with an ohmmeter, it's got to be done with a millivolt meter or a voltmeter, if there's any voltage appearing across that grounding clamp or the wiring to that grounding clamp because it's not making real good contact, that voltage drop would be created by the current of the 7800 volt primary not being properly grounded at the dropping transformer outside your house. And if you're supplying the ground, then current flowing through that grounding clamp and the voltage drop it's creating would be driven by an extremely strong AC current. And you can't measure AC current with an ohmmeter. By going to your AC voltage scale or the millivolt scale, yes, you can measure it. And by the way, an ohmmeter will not respond to AC. So there's a number of reasons why you can't measure ohms in that case. You can't open it up to measure ohms. It's dangerous. And even if there are ohms there, the AC voltage created across those ohms will dominate, and you should measure the AC voltage. So on your AC scale or your millivolt AC scale of a good digital voltmeter, you may be able to measure voltage drop across various portions of that wiring to the water pipe. That would be a worthy measurement to be made. Now, we've got both Steve and Alex in that order. They want to make further comments. Steve, KC2MDP, I think you work with power wiring, so quite possibly you've got experience in this. And by the way, that beautiful picture of a radio tower that's on QRZ.com for KC2MDP, where did you take that picture, Steve? KC2MDP, KQRIW in the TechNet.
There we go. Actually, that picture I found on the website a couple of years ago. My grandfather was into the long line stuff, and he used to take me here and there when he lived down in Florida there. That's where that came from. And as far as the electrical problem, you hit the nail right on the head. I would say there's probably an 80% chance that he's getting voltage back on that ground. Now, it could be, I mean, if his house is old enough, I mean, even if it's not so old, that he's basically just got a loose ground between, let's say, two outlet boxes or something. And, he could be getting eddy currents back on that ground. He could be getting voltage from another device that's coming back on that ground. I've ran into this problem several times with TVs. Nell's idea is great with the pigtail. And another thing I do is I take my voltage meter and I go from the neutral part of the outlet to the ground and to see if I get any voltage there. That'll tell you even the slightest voltage will cause a problem with the TV. Let me let it drop for a second. As far as checking down at the water pipe, I mean, you can do that.